Hey, it's WeZone. You're listening to Current Events, Politics, Presidents, and much more with Adam Lept and our official presidentologist, Dr. Ron Feinman, on a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor every Monday morning, starting a few minutes after 10, right here on WWGH 107.1.
And a very good Monday morning to you. August 12th already, back to school in some districts. Well, I'm too old to go to school, but, you know, here on the radio, we learn about stuff every single day. Yes, we even learned how to giggle. And if there's a giggle in the background, it must only belong to our official presidentologist, as introduced by the weasel himself, Dr. Ronald L. Feinman. But we have a little bit of a surprise today. Not only will Dr. Feinman be joining us for a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor, we're going to have on a gentleman who's been on a couple times with me before. We're going to, well, probably talk politics and who knows whatever else, but this gentleman's main line of work is art. He's a very talented artist who paints drawings of people in situations that look so real. You think you'd be looking at a photograph. Great detail. He teaches art. Quite a talent. And again, he's been on before. He's in the great Garden State of New Jersey, Cory Booker territory. And his name is Dan Finaldi. Let me see if the intern has properly patched everything together, if I've said my thoughts and prayers and we'll see if everything is working properly. Ron, we know you're there because I heard you giggle a couple times. And Dan.
Yes, I'm here.
Dan, are you also there?
I am here.
Well, that's good, Dan. How are things in the great Garden State of New Jersey today?
Today they're beautiful. It's a beautiful summer day. The heat is horrible. Heat spell July was miserable. But today has been really very pleasant. I was outside painting all day. Yesterday was equally pleasant to the day before, so we've had a respite from the terrible heat, and I've enjoyed it immensely. So
Dan, before we get into our show, Ron is on with me enough times and with Scott. We all know what he does. He teaches history and what I call presidentology. He writes books, and he writes a blog that's almost celebrating its 11th anniversary called theprogressiveprofessor.com, and again, he talks and sometimes debates or even argues politics with me and whomever else may be in the room yeah. At the time. Dan, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself also. You've only been on a couple times in the past.
What do you want to know? I'm a teacher.
What you do for a living, your educational background, where you live, all that kind of stuff.
Okay. Well, as you said, I live in New Jersey. I've been here since 1990. I moved here not by plan. It was my wife. We were living in Brooklyn. After Brooklyn College, I thought that was where I wanted to stay, but my wife had other designs in her mind. She hated Brooklyn, and it was too crowded, too noisy, too unfamiliar. She's a Westchester girl. She did not like Brooklyn. So we were there for about 2 years, and then she said, you know, I think I want to go to graduate school. I want to get out of here. So I said, okay, where do you want to go? And she said, I want to go to Rutgers. And I said, okay. So she went to Rutgers. And for me, it was like, oh, my God, I'm leaving New York. But in short order, it was really not that bad. I mean, where we live is in the bedroom of Rutgers, bedroom community of Rutgers, a very small town called Highland Park, which is a lovely town. And it looks like a Brooklyn neighborhood. In fact, where we lived in Brooklyn, it was a town or a neighborhood called Midwood, which is sandwiched in between Borough Park and Flatbush. It's a nice neighborhood, big houses close together, small yards, and basically Highland Park is the same thing. The houses aren't as big, but they're very tightly fitted together, open porches, big tree lined streets, and a hop, skip, and a jump to the bus and the train to New York City, and literally less than one mile walk to Rutgers main campus. So it's a great community. It's a very progressive community, and I settled here without a hitch, and it was a relief because I'm not a country person and I'm not a suburban person, and this is neither. But when you're in the city for a whole day, which is what I do often enough, when I come to Highland Park, it does feel like, my goodness, this is a nice hamlet. And it really is. It's a quiet, nice hamlet. So I'm talking to you, I'm sitting on my front porch enjoying the night air, looking at this street light here that's illuminating the night landscape, and there are people walking by on the sidewalk, and one guy just waved. It's a very neighborly, nice neighborhood, beautiful neighborhood. I'm a painter, I'm an artist, as you mentioned. I don't like to affiliate with photorealism, because I don't paint from photographs, I don't draw from photographs. I draw directly from observation. I don't like my work to look like photographs, although when people see things that look realistically, by default, they always say, oh, it looks like a photograph, which I understand, you know. But if you look up photorealism is distinct in that you really can't see a difference between a photograph and a painting. And that was the whole point of photorealism. But realism, as an art form, as a genre, runs the gamut. You have things that can be loosely representational of reality. You can have things that are more tightly representational of reality. So it runs a much wider scope. Realist artists could use photographs as reference material. A lot of artists do, and quite a few artists don't. I don't. I look at life as it is, and I paint it. If it's awkward, it's awkward. I like it being awkward. You know, that's just the way of that's what inspires me. So I paint from life. I paint people who pose for me. I paint my students. The students that I paint per year, they come to me. I don't have to beg anybody to paint. They say, we want you to paint us. In fact, this past year I had four different groups of kids that came and insisted me to paint them. I had science kids. They said, we want you to paint us in the science room. I did that. I had these young women who would be considered like the top of the food chain in terms of the female population, and they wanted me to paint them. They're very popular kids. So that came across in the painting. I had two girls who are immigrant girls. They were both from Latin America, one Puerto Rican and one Mexican, and they both wanted me to paint them. And then I had the LGBT kids, which is actually a new group, a new club in our school. Very proud of them, and the fact that they feel comfortable enough now. Just a few years ago, they didn't, but now they do in our community, school community, and they wanted me to paint them. So that was really fun. So through the school year, I paint my students, and in the summertime, I'm painting outside, I would say 95% of the time, because I just love being outside. So, and that's what I do.
I want to ask you, during the interview, you were in Maine for a while doing paintings this summer, correct, Dan?
Yes. My mentor, I studied at Brooklyn College for my master's degree, and two of my mentors, my main mentor is still painting and active. She's 92 years old, and one of my other art teachers, I can't call him a mentor, but he was a big influence, Lois Dodd. You can look her up. She's a very, very well-known artist. They're both Brooklyn College was a city, part of the city university system. Ron knows that. But it's a gem of a school. It had a faculty that was a world-class faculty. It was just unbelievable, the people that taught at Brooklyn College. I mean, in every discipline, not just fine art, poetry, fine art, biology, psychology, English, you had one of the great masters of Milton, one of the foremost masters of Milton. Taught at Brooklyn College. You had I don't know how many Nobel laureates taught at Brooklyn College. You had great, great poets. John Ashbery, he taught at Brooklyn College. In my department is Lois Dodd, Philip Perlstein. Again, you may not know these people, but if you look them up, they're seminal artists of their age, you know, of the past 50, 60 years.
Yeah, I have to say, and I also had professors at Brooklyn College from sort of the City University Graduate School, so they were really outstanding. You're correct. And I also, 40 years ago, taught a few summers at Brooklyn College. The students were great.
Oh, yeah, they're great. Really, it was an incredible experience. Beautiful. And they were so likable. And they were not standoffish. They were real mentors, and they extended themselves. And I became a friend, and then I transitioned from student to friend fairly quickly. I'm, graduate students are older anyway, of course. you know, we're, you know, in our mid to late 20s. By the time you get to an MFA program, that's where you are. The MFA, I should say, is a seminal program. It's like a doctorate for any other degree. There is no real doctorate for painting or fine art. Art history, different, but not visual art. So MFA is a different kind of degree than a master's, a regular master's. It's a 46 to 50 credit degree. You had to have multiple reviews and a major show at the end of your at the end of your degree. So it's a seminal degree. It's a terminal degree, I should say. That's a terminal degree for that, for painting, for art. At any rate, I became very friendly with these people, and they became lifelong friends. Lois Dodd, she works in Manhattan, and she, in the summer, she's up in Maine, and I spent a week with her last year, and this year we were together for 2 weeks painting. And I did a painting of her in her studio, and a lot of landscape painting in the vicinity where she lived.
We are speaking with Dan Finaldi, an artist and art teacher in the northern New Jersey area, as a special guest of myself and our usual guest, Dr. Ron L. Fineman, the presidentologist and professor of history and other things of interest. Ron, if you could do me a little teeny-beeny favor, just lower your volume just a little bit, because you're a little bit louder than Dan, and I try to keep everything equal. So just a couple decibels
okay.
for me, that would be wonderful. You always
okay,
sound,
sorry.
That's okay. We won't take any points off. We won't paddle you. You won't have to go to the principal's office. Just lower your volume just a touch. Maybe move a little further away from the phone or something, just to make sure everything is nice and it's nice and even. You know, Dan, my dad went to Rutgers, to the law school, and kind of interesting too. Brooklyn, isn't that where Welcome Back, Kotter took place? And we've talked many times. The younger Ron looked a lot like
Mr. Kotter. You know, I used to watch the show, but I didn't know whether it was Brooklyn or Manhattan.
Yeah, we talk often that a younger Ron Fineman looked a lot like
Mr.
Kotter.
Gay Potter did look a lot like me when I had a mustache years ago. That's true. I've had people tell me that.
So, you know, just interesting how sometimes things kind of all come together. And I kind of giggled a bit when I heard that. On a more contemporary note, Dan, if I'm not mistaken, yesterday, I think I didn't get the timeline right, because, you know, time flies when you get older, as my mom always told me. The ProgressiveProfessor.com, the blog written by our usual guest, Dr. Ron Fineman, celebrated its 11th birthday. How about that? August 11th, 2008, the blog debuted, and on the 11th, had 6,421 entries. Pretty cool. And he continues to write. And as we've talked about before, did he really think that when he started the blog that the president would be Donald J. Trump? You know, so politics always throws a throws a curve at all of us. The article you wrote, Ron, last Friday certainly has a relationship to the area that Dan is from. That is northeastern New Jersey, about the farm system for the future, while the Republicans have a gloomy future, speaking about the 172 presidential hopefuls. very diverse bunch, as we've talked about, male, female, black, white, Latino, mixed race, even Andrew Yang with his $1,000 a month stipend, which I call a welfare payment. Sorry, I'm just so offended by him, I had to get something out that aggravates me, so it's a shame, because otherwise I actually like Yang. He seems very smart and science-oriented.
Well, I ask you, though, what do you think about Andrew Yang weeping in Iowa about what's been going on, you know, with the shooting in El Paso? You really get emotional.
I would say, from what I've seen in the media and just a lot of my own observations, that quite possibly a rattlesnake may have more compassion than our president.
I was interested, yes.
Well, rattlesnakes, they got a compassionate side, I guess. But would you agree with that, Ron? Is that being too hard, or is that kind of your feeling also?
I would say I agree with you, and I'm surprised you just said that as a thought.
Yeah, well, as I said, there are things I like about Donald Trump, but things I don't like about him, and the don't-like side is larger, sorry to say. But, you know, it's America, and I have freedom of speech, and that's my discussion on said topic. And again, we have many ethnicities and other demographic variables in our field of Democratic candidates. 36-year-old gay gentleman, Mr. Buttigieg, from nearby Indiana, of course, same state that...
Actually, 37.
Yeah, well, that's younger than I am, and certainly younger than you are, Ron. Same state,
yeah.
Same state as Mr.
Father.
Yeah, same state as Mr. Pence, and Bernie Sanders of Jewish ancestry. So, definitely not just the old white men that you normally see, but one of the candidates, Dan, obviously Mr. Booker, is from your neck of the woods. Are people in your area in northern New Jersey? I believe he used to be the mayor of Newark, New Jersey, and he's obviously still there as a senator. Are people excited about the prospect of him possibly being president? Has he incited controversy? Because he's a bit of a polarizing figure also. How much has the Cory Booker presidential hopefulness affected people's discussions and anything going on there in northern New Jersey?
Well, I don't live in northern New Jersey. Northern New Jersey would be considered, I would say, Essex County and north, Bergen County. Jersey, I'm not a Jerseyan, I'm a New Yorker. And Jersey, if you ask Jerseyans about how Jersey is broken up, they say, some say there's northern Jersey and there's southern Jersey. in actuality, there's northern Jersey, southern Jersey, Central Jersey, Western Jersey. I mean, Jerseyans don't make those demarcations, but really that's what it truly is. I'm about 32 miles west of Midtown Manhattan, almost a straight line. I'm south. So, but I'm not northern Jersey, and I'm not. I'm about 20 minutes south of Newark. I'm in Middlesex County. It's considered Central Jersey. But to get to your question about Booker, Booker was the mayor, as we know, was the mayor of Newark, New Jersey, at first. That's how he really rose to be known. I mean, and he took over at a time where Newark was going through a lot of... I mean, Newark has been going through a lot of trouble for many, many years. A lot of corruption, a lot of crime, a lot of... like a lot of cities in the Northeast after the 60s, it suffered a great deal. But it's going through a renaissance now. All of the cities, except for Camden and Trenton, all the cities in New Jersey are doing quite well. Jersey City is probably going to surpass Newark as the most populated city. There's constantly being built up. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous city. A lot of New Yorkers and people who live in New York are going to Jersey City and vice versa. And Newark is building that too. It's going through a lot of changes. When Booker came in, it was just starting to improve, and he really has to be given some credit for that because he was sort of, the harbinger of things to come. However, when you go to Newark, I've been to Newark, and I know some artists in Newark, and I knew the head of an artist space in Newark, who's a very prominent person in the community. They don't think too highly of Booker. They thought of him as a climber, and they thought of him as a person who was thinking of himself only, and not as much of Newark. So there was a lot of bitterness at the end of his tenure between people of Newark and Booker. Then, of course, as we know, he became senator, and now he's presidential candidate. Now, in terms of how much love and appreciation New Jerseyans have of Booker, I think he polls pretty well. You know, I think he would get reelected without a problem. But I don't know in the primaries. I suspect that he would not win the majority of Democratic voters of the state against the top three. And the top three right now, Ron, you probably know, I think the top three are Biden, Sanders, and Warren.
Yes, and honestly, Joe Biden has the black vote in most of the country at this point, South Carolina. He's going to do much better, it looks, than Harris or Booker, which is astounding, really, unless he loses the advantage. But right now, it's going to him. Yeah.
But, Ron, I don't think it's astounding because, Obama... and he got along incredibly well, and that carries through. I mean that you know, they love him for a reason. He's not coming out of nowhere. I mean, if he had not been vice president to Obama, I don't know if he would be doing as well as he is, but I certainly think that he's benefiting from being vice president to Obama. But
that's a very good statement. Yes, you're right.
But I also think Ron, your volume, just lower it a little bit for me.
Sorry.
I also think that he had a good reputation with the African American community in Delaware for many years, and I think he actually did quite well in that community. So he doesn't have. I mean, I know that Harris went after him, and actually, after she went after him, she suffered a little bit. She went up slightly to number three or number two, or she rose like 7 points. But then she fell back down. So I don't think that attacking Biden for racial insensitivities was a good move.
And yeah, I wanted to step in here and say, yesterday on Meet the Press, Hugh Hewitt, who is a conservative, said he suspects Harris is going to be the nominee. Isn't that interesting? I was surprised. He said, I think she's going to be the nominee. I don't know why he thinks that, but he thinks she's going to overcome Harris and Warren and Sanders.
I don't. You know, Hugh Hewitt doesn't really. I mean, he doesn't really inspire me as much of a an analyst. I think he has said things in the past that have been sort of like malarkey. So,
well,
I think
anyway,
that
he's a nasty person. But that's what he said. I said, really?
Well, I mean, who knows? I mean, I think that Nate Silver. I listen to Nate Silver, and his measure of probability is that. He says it in a way that's kind of tricky, but he says it like this. He says Biden has less than 50% chance of being the nominee. That's less than a coin toss. But that's which doesn't sound good, but he said that is way better than anybody else.
Wow.
So, I mean, but like, again, that's you're talking about probabilities here, and he's an expert in probability. So I would listen to Nate Silver over Hugh Hewitt. Anybody who says anything like what Hewitt just said, I would discard or dismiss.
Well, I'm just mentioning, but I would add that never has the front runner in polls in the year before the election ever been the nominee. So if you go by that, Joe Biden is not going to be the nominee. So we'll have to see.
Yeah, we'll have to see. Although, you know, I mean, there's no reason to think that he won't be unless there are things that happen that say he won't be. And right now, there's nothing that says he won't be.
Awful lot of gaffes he's made lately. And, you know, he was talking about how he met the Parkland kids from Florida. He wasn't vice president when that happened in 2017. He makes a lot of mistakes, and that's been noticed.
Yeah, but that's nothing new. I mean, he has had a lifelong history of gaffes putting them out. But that does not
But people think it's fun that he's a nice guy. They like him.
Yeah, I don't think that the gaffes are something that is going to be a killer for him. I really don't. I think if he gets sick, you know, or if he, you know, somehow can't fulfill the whole, you know, test of the primaries, I think, you know, he'll probably will obviously do him in. But I don't think gaffes are an issue. I think he's likable, and I think that, you know, he has a wide swath of voters. I mean, people over 50 really love him. Like, a lot.
Yes.
It's a very important demographic.
Now, I always said about Joe Biden, he's the kind of person who would be your neighbor. Say, can I help you with something?
Yeah, true.
Adam, back here on a finer mid-morning coffee break, where a new wrinkle has been added. We've added Dan Finaldi, a very talented artist in the Garden State of New Jersey, art teacher, vendor of art, and he paints realistic pictures that look... So I see it better than a photograph of a diverse group of people. We invite you to visit his website also. We talk about politics because that's all part of the fun, because politics is certainly intermingled in all aspects of our life. And we were just discussing Cory Booker, who is from the approximate neck of the woods that Dan is. As I see it, Dan, New Jersey, you know, which has a kidney or kidney bean state, is a small state and area. and therefore central and northern New Jersey I kind of put together, and southern New Jersey I kind of put with Philadelphia or Atlantic City. So it's still,
well, you know, it's small an area, but it's the most concentrated state in the union.
Yes.
Yeah, it's almost
interesting.
There's 9 million people in this small state.
Yeah, with my interest in geography, New Jersey, I believe, has no areas that are considered rural. They're all a metro area, either essentially New York.
No, that's not true. There's a lot of farmland in New Jersey, and in fact, it's a breadbasket state. There's a lot of farm to table farms in New Jersey, and the soil is incredibly, incredibly good here. And, I mean, we have a very long growing season. We get produce from July all the way through December. Very few states can say that. You know, southern states can, but in the north, you can't really say that. And in the northeast, there are a few states that have the kind of meat of stuff that we grow here.
Right. What I mean, Dan, is that every part of New Jersey and I'm just looking at a map, too, because I love geography and I love the demographics and this kind of stuff. Every part of New Jersey is in a metro area of some kind. Obviously, some of the areas aren't as urban as others, whereas in Ohio, there are counties that are rural and aren't part of a metro area. The main ones, obviously, are New York City, Sussex, Morris counties you mentioned, and Philadelphia and the southern New Jersey area. But New Jersey is kind of unique that way, in that there aren't any areas that are, from a statistical or demographic standpoint, considered rural. But yes, there certainly is farmland. But even in the Columbus area in Ohio, there are parts of Columbus where there are farms, as well as some immediate suburbs. But New Jersey is kind of interesting.
And a factoid about New Jersey is the only non-slave state that did not vote Abraham Lincoln in 1860.
Yeah. New Jersey gets a bad reputation. It's an interesting place. It certainly helped to bring gambling to pretty much every part of the country, with Atlantic City having been the second second area, essentially the entire state of Nevada, that allowed gambling, casino gambling, and that's pretty much spread everywhere. And I think you guys would agree, some of the decline of Atlantic City has brought about people's decision to vote in favor of gambling in other states. Atlantic City, with a rich history, does have a few problems, but I think, like a lot of areas in New Jersey, including Newark, which is certainly kind of like Gary, Indiana, it's a bit infamous for having some problems that are often associated with urban areas. I think it is getting a renaissance. Newark's not a bad place. Yes, it has its bad parts, but I think it is turning in the right direction. And will continue to do so. And Jersey is an interesting state, again, that kidney or kidney bean shape. It's not a big state in area, so it's not difficult to travel from one end to another. Some people commute from the Philadelphia area to New York City or vice versa. It's, you know, a couple-hour drive as long as the traffic isn't too bad, although that's not really too common in the northeastern part of the country. But if any listeners, you've ever been to New Jersey, it is a much better place than you might think that it is, and than what you might hear. And it just, in a rather small area, it is quite diverse, as Dan has mentioned. I mean, you go from the Philadelphia area.
I mean, as far as diversity, I can tell you, you have, if you go to northwestern Jersey, it looks, I mean, the Delaware Water Gap area, I mean, you really cannot, I mean, if there are some areas up there that look like Vermont. And then you have the shore area from Sandy Hook all the way down to Cape May County. That's a long line of shore area, which is a multi-billion dollar industry of shore travel and entertainment. I mean, people go to the Jersey Shore from the north, south, east, and west. I mean, the Jersey beaches are very, very well known. And, I mean, it's a big moneymaker for the state.
Yeah, and lots of beaches. One thing we don't have much of in central and mid-Ohio, we do have beaches in Lake Erie. But New Jersey has got a big shoreline, and it's a cool place. And you don't have to go far to still not be far away from a big city, essentially Philadelphia or New York City, but still kind of feel that you're out in the country. So not a bad place at all. I mean, bit of a biased opinion. Again, my dad went to school there, and we used to live in the Newark area. So I've seen it And we used to go to Atlantic City a lot on vacation since when we lived out in the East Coast. So would you agree, Dan, New Jersey gets a bit of a bad rap and is definitely moving in the right direction in terms of becoming a place that's more attractive, not just to live, but also to vacation?
Of course it's a good place to live, and of course it's a great place to vacation. Now, as an artist, there's good and bad. Now, the good is the vicinity to New York City is unquestionably ideal. The good thing is that you have a quiet hamlet. Artists need a quiet hamlet. A lot of artists work in New York City, but they have their studios. But in New Jersey, you can have a bigger studio for a lot less money. For me, as a painter of life and as a painter of people, what I love, what I've grown to really, really love, is the diversity. And I can't think of a more diverse place. I mean, there's so many different. It's a real melting pot here. And all I have to do is go right down to the park, and you get a taste of the banquet of diversity of New Jersey. Anything you can imagine that makes America a melting pot, you'll experience right down the street in the park that I go to and paint on Sundays. Everything from Egyptian immigrants, Indian immigrants, the islands, Central South America, on and on and on. So I just love it. I sit there and I listen to all the different music that's playing in the park while I'm painting, and I just say, my God, this is so wonderful. I don't know if I could live in an area that's more homogenous now. I'm just so used to the colors and the flavors and the sounds and the diversity that I can't go back to white bread.
Yeah, it's intriguing. New Jersey is rather unique, and we often find that in areas that you may read about, but you end up going there, and it's like it's nothing at all what I expected. So definitely good to hear the perspective from someone who has lived there for a long time, has worked there, and has seen the different parts of the Great Garden State. Adam Lepp here on our Monday morning program called Mid-Morning Coffee Break with our usual guest, Dr. Ron Fineman, but also with a mutual friend of ours, Dan Finaldi, an artist and art teacher in the state of New Jersey. We've been talking about his domicile of New Jersey, about Cory Booker, who's, of course, from that area, as well as his background. Talk a little bit about politics. That certainly has been the hot topic almost everywhere. You mentioned an associate of yours, Dan, said that Biden, Sanders, and Warren are the three top Democratic contenders.
And Harris.
Where does this person think Buttigieg is? Does he really have a chance? Are we ready for a younger gay president, or might that have to come a little further down the road?
Stuart Shapiro, he's a professor of political science at the Blaustein School, which is a part of Rutgers. And you can look him up. He has a blog. He writes a lot. He writes for The Hill. He writes for Politico. He's well-known. I don't know. I have to ask him about it. But I think he thinks of Buttigieg as a third-tier candidate. And I don't know if he thinks he has much of a chance. But he likes him. He personally likes a lot of mock. That too, but I don't think he thinks Bennett has much of a chance. I think he's pretty certain that those top three, four candidates, are one of them is going to be it.
Well, we certainly shall find out, and like almost anything in politics, more than likely in a couple of weeks it'll be different than it is today, but that's all part of the fun.
I like to put it, Judge.
May I intervene to say, at this point in 1975, nobody thought Jimmy Carter was someone to pay attention to. And in 1991, Bill Clinton with the sex scandal, are you kidding? In 2007, a mixed-race African-American senator who had a strange name and a middle name, Hussein, is going to be the nominee. So I wouldn't leave Pete Buttigieg out of it. I think he has a very good chance of rising. I really think he does.
So we'll
I think he would be great. I think he'd be wonderful.
Yeah, he, like Melania, speaks many languages. They certainly would have.
He's a lot more educated, believe me, than Melania. Melania can't even speak decent English, sorry to say.
But,
and he can speak good Norwegian, I understand, in the case of Buttigieg.
They both have nice hair, though. I'll give him credit for that.
Oh,
God. So, well, we have to put something in that's kind of amusing because I never take myself too seriously. The big issue, guys, of course, has been immigration. We could have a debate about it because we don't all see eye to eye on it, but we're not going to do that. Instead, we're going to just talk about it on a general level. Dan, is there a way to solve this immigration problem? Is there a way for all Americans to agree how we solve the problem, which I think has a lot to do with people not agreeing as to what the problem is? Or will it continue to be the major issue that it is today? And how much do you think Donald Trump is causing all this polarization?
That's a lot of questions. But I think, number one, your first question, of course there's a way to solve the problem. We are a nation of immigrants. It's never, ever been different, and it never will be different. So it's not a problem. It's one day we will not be a nation of immigrants. It's kind of malarkey. In fact, the people who project population show deep. There are countries that are going to grow older and decrease in population. The United States will not have that issue because we are a nation of immigrants.
Thank you.
So that is not a problem. It's never been a problem in terms of who we are. The problem is nativism. That's a problem, and that's also the paradox with America is that while we have always been a nation of immigrants, we have had these moments of nativism. I mentioned my teacher Philip Perlstein. He's 95 years old. He talks about his youth when he was in high school in the 1930s, and the art contest that our teacher would have the kids submit their artwork to were all themed art contests. You know what the theme was in the 1930s before the war? America first. America first. America first.
Charles Lindbergh.
Yes. It was all that, America first. It was that all the time. You know, so going back to the thing about the problem isn't the immigration. The problem is the attitude, this nativist attitude, which comes up, rises its head, and then it goes away. Why? Because it has to go away because it's not pragmatic. We're not going to be a nation that's not going to have immigration, number one, and we can't be a nation that hurts people because they're immigrants, number two. And number three, has happened historically, immigrants who are here, first-generation immigrants, their children who are here, talking about Latino Americans, but not only Latino Americans, Asian Americans, they will band together and form a grand coalition to beat back this nativism, which is what happened in the 20s and 30s.
Exactly.
And if you look at Fiorello LaGuardia, that's exactly the coalition he formed. He formed a coalition, and he was a Republican, he formed a coalition of anti-nativists. And he was a friend of FDR, and he formed this coalition which beat back this horrible America First ideology, which was, you know, creeping up. The reason why it surprises us today is because we had an Obama presidency, a two-term presidency. I think that this caught everybody off guard, this America First stuff. We thought, oh my God, what is this, you know? We're back to the 1920s again, but you know it's this idea that the problem, quote unquote, the problem is how to deal with this nativist stuff so that it doesn't become violent and so that it make everyone feel horrible about being American. You know, because the immigration thing is not going to go away, it just isn't.
Very well said. I want to commend you. You made a great statement, Dan. I totally agree with you.
Oh, thank you.
Well, certainly it's a topic of controversy, and it's good to hear people's opinions. And I think one thing about immigration, gentlemen, is no two people are going to have the same perspective, and people like myself sometimes adjust their opinion day to day. And we take a look at news events, and that can certainly have an effect on it. But certainly immigration's a big issue in the upcoming presidential election, and we see one president with strong opinions and some people agree with them, some people don't, and some rhetoric that we've heard from some of the Democratic candidates, which may turn some people off, and in some other cases may encourage
let me just interject. The opinion that of immigration that that Trump has is really a paleoconservative opinion. It's not a contemporary opinion held by a majority of people. Okay, so it's not like you're going to meet people on the street. One person will have a Trumpian idea of immigration. The next person will have a more contemporary idea of immigration. That's not true. This paleoconservatism is, I have to say it again, the America First is a paleoconservative nativist ideology. It is not contemporary. And it's about white nationalism. It's about white supremacy. It's about being afraid of the other. It's not about immigration. It's about racism. So that's something that I would say 70% of the population are not going to be really fond of. And if you look at polls, every poll I've seen about immigration is be treating them fairly. Now, I think the only issue that is the caveat is when it is legal or legal. That's the caveat. You know, illegal immigration versus legal immigration. What do you do with people who come here illegally, quote unquote? Now, that is a debate that has to, that's a problem that has to be solved, but it certainly is not going to be solved the Trumpian way. By, you know, putting cages and beating the game. It's going to be resolved through ways that we've always resolved it. It's going to be a cogent, legal methodology that's not inhumane. It doesn't hurt people, doesn't separate families, doesn't starve children for life, doesn't make people feel horrible about being American. It's going to be, a system that is logical and humane. That's the answer. Not the Trump's answer, the Trumpian answer.
Of course,
sorry.
Like my mama also always told me, time goes by when you're having fun. We have about 2 or 3 minutes left. I thank you very much, Dan, for joining us today. Dan Finaldi, artist and art teacher in the great Garden State of New Jersey, joining my usual guest, Dr. Ron Fineman, talking about presidential candidates, a little bit about a favorite topic of mine, U.S. geography, and, of course, immigration, and the 172.5 Democratic candidates. With about 2 minutes left, Dan, tell our listeners about your website, danielfinaldi.com, and what kind of outstanding artwork they would see if they were to visit that website.
Well, you can find my artwork in three places. You can find it through LinkedIn, but you can find it at Instagram. I do a lot of posting on Instagram. I do work in process, in progress. I have films and everything of myself painting and on Instagram. And my webpage is danielfinaldi.com, www.danielfinaldi.com, and you can see, my curriculum vitae, shows that I've been in, articles that have been published. There are links to all the articles. And so those are the two ways to see my work.
I think in today's world with so much negativity, it's good to look at something positive like art. Especially the quality of the work that Dan does. It's quite amazing, and I always admire people that can paint realistic paintings because I don't have a lot of talent in that area. In fact,
art, music, and science are the great uniters. I think sports, too. You put sports in that,
well,
too.
Certainly science is my area. Music, well, I occasionally sing for comedy purposes. I used to play guitar, but in terms of music, I'm better at playing music and analyzing music than I am actually making it. But that's what makes the world go round. And hopefully, listeners, you've enjoyed our discussion with Dr. Fineman and Mr. Dan Finaldi. Thank you again, gentlemen, for joining us here on the
thank
Talking
Thank you so
Place.
Much again. And Dan was wonderful. He really was.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Ron. Thank you. Thanks for inviting me. Thank
it's
you very much.
Third time Dan has been on with me. We'll make it a fourth time soon. And again, feel free to send me an email with any questions, comments, complaints, concerns. And we have a private email server, just like Hillary, adam@wwgh1071.com. Find out about Ron on his blog, which celebrated its 11th anniversary yesterday, theprogressiveprofessor.com. And find out about Dan at danielfinaldi.com. That's Finaldi. Adam Lepp here on The Talking Place. WWGH Radio.